dun 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 dun. Groundhog Day once again. Monday night, we won Monday Night War. Open with the Judgment Day, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, and the partner du jour. We had Matt Riddle, we had Seth Rollins, now we got Cody Rhodes. It was a fun night. Don't get me wrong, that Quebec crowd was tremendous. They're homeboys, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn. They're in their hometown, of course, little extra love, and it resonated on the TV. For me, I thought tonight's Raw, if you ever wanted to experience going to a WWE house show and having some of your hometown heroes along with Cody Rhodes in the main event, and they had cameras rolling, and we got to see that house show on our TV screens, that's what you got tonight. Because honestly, yes, it sort of progressed some of the matches for Payback. Obviously, if you tuned into Saturday's edition of the Don Tony Show, you knew Miz was going to lose a match tonight. We didn't know against who, but LA Knight would be the cause of it. That leads to your Payback match. Shinsuke Nakamura with the careless whisper to Seth Rollins. I tell you the truth, Shinsuke Nakamura's segment today was my favorite part of Raw. Because as I'm watching it, I'm saying to myself, other than NXT, I don't recall WWE ever spending that much time with Nakamura cutting a promo. Who gives a shit if it's not in English? You got subtitles. We know how to read. But it made sense. It was powerful. Everything about it was beautiful. And I'm watching and I'm saying to myself, how many goddamn years has he been in this company? And it took him this long to do something that powerful? Kind of like took me by surprise. The women's tag team championships resolved as only WWE would. Piper Nevin says, give me the fucking title. It's mine. And she's actually advertised now as one half of the tag team champions. I mean, listen, it's sports entertainment. You know, when people get butthurt about title reigns and title runs and things like that, understand it's sports entertainment. When you feel like someone is losing too many matches or winning too many matches or this and that, understand it's predetermined. You know, we know that. So it's entertainment. It's just sometimes it's not good entertainment. And by the way, go check out last Monday's show, 40-minute mark. We had that conversation about Gunther losing tonight to set up a rematch at Payback. Because Gunther versus Chad Gable going directly into Payback is not necessarily that strong for some diehards. People would love to see it. But on paper, with Gunther going for the record, was it September 9th? Gunther's going for the record. How do you make anybody believe that 1 week before the record, Chad Gable could possibly beat Gunther? The only way you could do that is to have Gunther lose before Payback without losing a championship. Now, last week, I will admit, last week we focused on the DQ idea of it. But last week we said there's only one way to really get people to buy into Gunther versus Chad Gable at Payback, and that is for Gunther to lose tonight. And guess what? Gunther lost tonight. First time ever losing since going to the main roster, because the beat the clock challenge doesn't matter. It's okay. It's all right. Gunther's still making history. You know, think back to Asuka. Asuka had this insane run in NXT. And some people may think it's not a mistake. Some people think it was a mistake. I tend to lean towards the mistake factor. Because NXT is developmental for the main roster, obviously. And one thing that WWE never did while Asuka was in NXT, and that is to put her more in a even playing field with other women on the roster. She left NXT dominating like no one had ever dominated in a women's division in NXT before. And guess what? This week in wrestling history, a lot of people seem to forget this. Remember when Finn Balor had to relinquish the Universal Championship because of injury? Well, guess what? That same week, Asuka had to relinquish her NXT Championship due to injury. Injury was the only thing that stopped Asuka in NXT. What happened? They brought NXT to the, they brought Asuka to the main roster. And do you remember the time where they had to start making her lose multiple matches so it's a little bit more of an even playing field? Carmella. Remember James Ellsworth? Remember wearing the mask in the cage and all the bullshit antics? And Asuka lost multiple matches. And people couldn't buy into it. It wasn't believable because they had put Asuka so above everyone else. Sooner or later, you have to start bringing her down a little bit in an even playing field. Gunther, sooner or later, they're going to have to do that. Gunther is not going to go 893-5 in his WWE career. There's going to be times where he's going to be pinned. There's going to be times where there's DQs, countouts. Not yet. Got to break the record first. But start preparing yourself because it is going to happen. And I don't think Gunther will lose anything as a result. I don't want to get into too many rants tonight. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit tired. You know, we did banger after banger after banger after banger of shows this weekend. And we did a killer one yesterday. Saturday, we did an awesome one. Friday was the watch party. By the way, for those that are interested, because I committed to 4 watch parties, if you'd like to join us tomorrow, everyone will have an opportunity to go on the floor and actually speak and be heard voice-wise or video or both if you want. We're going to do an NXT watch party tomorrow from 8 to 10. Remember, NXT Heat Wave takes place tomorrow. Carmelo Hayes defending the NXT Championship against Wes Lee, Dominic Mysterio and Rhea Ripley in a mixed tag match against Dragon Lee and Lyra Vicaria. Von Wagner versus Baron Corbin. It's going to be interesting. The Rock's daughter, Ava Rain, is going to be taking on Ivy Nile and Trick Williams taking on Ilya Dragunov. I think Nathan Frazier is taking on Noam Dar. So if you want, join us. You know, if you enjoy them, tomorrow is the time to show up because there's probably going to be one more and that's going to be it for the foreseeable future. So maybe you'd like to join us. Now, we're going to get into some news. Going to overview Raw. Not going to spend much time on it. I mean, I took a decent amount of notes. I have a few things to say about a few segments tonight. By the way, for those that were asking, what were the Quebec fans chanting to Trish Stratus in French? Well, if you translate it into English, the chant was, "We don't fucking care." Was it heel heat because she was bringing up Toronto and Calgary? I don't know. It seemed like not only did this segment feel flat tonight, but did Trish have to reel Becky back in at the very end? And Trish said something to Becky like, "Oh, you mentioned Zoe earlier," to like remind Becky, "Oh, you still have to announce the match next week in Nashville, Tennessee." Oh, man. You know, sometimes when you force something, You know, even WWE, you know, if the ingredients are not mixing well, sometimes you may need to really stir it up. And tonight, I don't know, it just felt like it took another step back. Got some updates for you regarding Edge, regarding Lacey Evans. Cool little story with Lacey Evans. I think even those who despise Lacey Evans may actually appreciate a little bit of the story that I'm going to get into in a little bit. And we're going to plug This Week in Wrestling History. And by the way, I actually got permission that I could share a few audio clips of history as long as it doesn't go over 5 minutes and as long as it doesn't focus on theme music. So I got three quick little highlights for This Week in Wrestling History that might give you a little bit of an incentive as to why you should tune in this week. And trust me, these are gems. Be This Week in Wrestling History 9 years ago. Anybody remember when the Bellas were feuding? Anybody remember how they fucked up in California? They were seen eating dinner in a California restaurant while on WWE TV, they were doing this.
You are one sad excuse.
Whoa. We got to rewind that. Yeah. 9 years ago. Here we go.
You are one sad excuse of a sister.
Stop.
You are one sad excuse of a human being.
Stop it.
As far as I'm concerned, I have no sister. I wish you died in the womb.
Blow that shit up. I forgot I blew that up. You should have died in the womb. Oh, my God. And that same week, they were seen eating dinner together in California. Can we take a picture? Brie and Nikki? Oh, sure. Dumb. Ugh. I forgive them. They're not on my TV anymore, so it's all good. Nothing against them personally, but... Oh, we got two more in a little bit. One of my favorite matches of all time on Monday Night Raw is an absolute clusterfuck because it would never, ever jive in 2023. Happened this week in history. By the way, when Trish name dropped that she's the first woman to ever main event Monday Night Raw. Not true. Believe it or not, This Week in History, I think, is the week where Lita took on Stephanie McMahon. That was the first women's main event on Monday Night Raw. WWE with the revisionist history because of the circumstances around that match. If you watch that match, you know why. So anyway, Edge. I want to give you a little update regarding Edge. And we got to talk about ratings. Because, again, with all due respect to some websites out there, they don't do the work themselves. Whatever someone else reports, they will just cut and paste it. And I actually broke down the numbers. And I teased it on Sunday, I think. I think I teased it yesterday, that some people are going to be a little disappointed with the rating that came in for Edge. Oh, it's not embarrassing, but it is disappointing. Anyway, Edge did an interview in Canada for the FAN morning show. It's not WFAN, the sports show here in New York Sports Channel. And this was recorded before SmackDown. For some reason, it wasn't released until after SmackDown, maybe because of what Edge said about his contract. And I'm not going to read you the whole transcript, but the one part in particular that will be of interest to a lot of you out there is this. Edge was asked about his future. And there's a lot of questions about when his WWE contract is up. Edge said about his future, and I quote, I can't say I haven't thought about it. I have for sure. But I realize I haven't come to any conclusions, and I'm kind of torn, honestly. I don't want to do this to the point where I don't feel like I'm able to have the output that I want. Only I know how I feel when I'm deep in a match. Oof, okay, didn't do enough cardio. Or I did all the cardio and I still feel this way. That's why I really want to collect myself after this thing, take a big old breath, and decide what that is. My contract is up at the end of September. This is my last contracted match. I have a lot of decisions to make. I can't do it now. I have to see how Friday goes. I know that's not a clear answer, but I don't have it yet. So what we come out of this is pretty much what we discussed on Saturday and on Sunday. For Edge, it's about quality of life. For Edge, it's about if he could still go. You know, he is back after many years being forced into retirement because of serious injury. That injury didn't just disappear. There's no voodoo doctors out there, and there's no magic lamp that just totally healed his bones 100%. And as of now, that was Edge's last match on his contract. Edge was contractually obligated for a certain number of matches, just like Brock Lesnar, just like Logan Paul, just like others. And as of now, Edge doesn't know what his future is. Could he go to AEW? Yes. We talked about that yesterday. But the one thing you have to remember in the back of your mind more than anything else is that if he wants to get paid, WWE has plenty of coin to pay this guy. So it's not a money issue as far as WWE goes. If Edge feels that he could still wrestle, even every couple of months, WWE would obviously give him that platform to perform. Edge is no longer this major risk that you hold your breath and you think, oh my God, how's he going to get through this match? This is not a case where WWE doesn't want him to wrestle anymore and he feels he could still go, a la Samoa Joe and others who ended up going to AEW and got to prolong their career. If Edge still wants to do this, he has the WWE to do it with. Think about what WWE has done for him, and remember what I also said yesterday. In about a month and a half, when this TKO deal is finalized, the only person from the McMahon family that will have any ownership whatsoever in the new corporation will be Vince McMahon with 16% of the ownership. Triple H will have a little stock. If anybody else buys any, remember there's still one spot left in the board of directors. It could very well be the return of Stephanie McMahon. We don't know. But that intimate connection with the McMahon operation is going to transform into a corporate conglomerate. So that emotional tie, you know, of course it's the wrestlers, it's the brand, it's the name, it's the, you know, the fans behind it. You know, there's a lot for reasons that if Edge wants to stay, he can. So keep that in the back of your mind, because his contract is up in September, which it will be up in 6 weeks, five and a half weeks. So once his contract is up, then what he wants to do, it'll be up to him. So that is straight from him. Now, we got some John Cena news, pretty big deal, especially on the heels of WrestleMania against Austin Theory, when John Cena kind of felt embarrassed, sort of, that he can't go like he used to. Fountain of Youth, he found it in the last couple of months because he is returning to the ring. And he's returning to the ring in less than 3 weeks. We'll get into that in a little bit. But first, I want to just give you the rating for SmackDown on Friday. More importantly, Edge. Because we had almost a full week. The rumors started coming out last weekend that Edge may have his last match. That might be his final match. We knew that we were celebrating 25 years of Edge, and he was taking on Sheamus. But for a week, there was a lot of strong buzz online that this might be Edge's final WWE match. Now, if you read 99% of the wrestling news sites out there that covered the rating, they pretty much wrote it off and said, it fell in line with last week's rating. But there was something that they left, there was a couple of things that they left out that were very, very important that I'm going to share with you right now. August 11th SmackDown rating, the week before, was 2,097,000. Okay? This past Friday, the rating was 2,094,000. There was only a 3,000 viewership difference. Now, again, if you read all these sites, they'll tell you, oh, it was in line with last week. Here's the issue. Number one, on August 11th, SmackDown was preempted in Miami, Cincinnati, Detroit, Baltimore, Tampa Bay, and Cleveland for NFL football. There were several markets that did not air SmackDown at 8 p.m. Eastern, 8 to 10, because of football. Not, quite a few markets. So that 2,097,000 number was a lot lower because of those markets. This, shout out to Mr. Rube Dog with the $5 Super Chat. Bring back breakfast soup. He misses me and Mish. I don't talk to Mish at all anymore. We have not talked since he left this show. I do not expect to talk to him again. It's nothing against him. I wish him well. I don't know what he's doing. And honestly, it's probably better that way. So I appreciate it. I shouted you out. But, you know, every so often somebody brings it up, it's not happening. So, and I wouldn't tease you that it would. Ain't happening. But getting back to Edge, the week before, SmackDown was preempted in many markets because of football. This week, SmackDown was preempted for football in only one market, and that was Atlanta. Let that sink in. So the week before, you had many markets preempted because of football. This week, there was only one. So the rating is a lot lower than it would normally be, especially with the bloodline. Okay? Here's another thing. What if I told you that Edge versus Sheamus, the first half of that match was the lowest rating of the night? It was. It did 2 million even. Exactly 2 million. The final part of that match increased to 2,140,000. But first half of that match, lowest rating of the entire night. Did a lot of fans just think it was just hype, you know, just WWE hype that this isn't really Edge's match? Or, you know what? I know this sounds cold, but maybe in 2023, for a lot of younger fans, they don't have that nostalgic feeling with Edge. They appreciate Edge. They see, you know, his history and he has a legendary career. But when you got the caliber of talent you got today, is Edge a big priority for a lot of fans right now? And maybe the answer is no. That is the God honest truth. Do you know what the high point was for SmackDown this past Friday? The Grayson Waller effect with Rey Mysterio, Santos Escobar, and LA Knight showing up. Did almost 2,300,000 viewers. So, just wanted to share that because, again, if you look around, you know, there's a very incomplete story about that rating. So, we'll get into the whole ratings report in a little bit because we have now found a trend with AEW Collision, and it's not a good trend. And I'm a little bit confused why they're doing something. I think explicitly. I think they're doing it on purpose. 5 straight weeks, Collision has done something And you ever hear that definition of madness? I think it's, you know, insanity or madness, doing the same thing all over and over again and expecting a different result. Well, for the last 5 weeks, they've been doing something with Collision. And as a result, every time they did the same damn thing, it ended up being the lowest part of Collision. So we'll share that in a little bit. Now, let's move on over to John Cena. First of all, on September 2nd, SmackDown, the day before Payback. It's September 1st. What am I saying? It's got to be September 1st. SmackDown is on September 1st. I should know because I'm going away on September 1st. So he's going to be on the September 1st SmackDown. That is the go-home show for Payback. But the big news is this. John Cena will be wrestling in India. Now, I think it's what, September 9th? I think that's where they're having that show in India. Interesting. John Cena wrote on Twitter, "Cannot wait to reunite with the WWE family live on SmackDown. Especially excited to meet the WWE Universe in India and wrestle for the first time ever." So not only is John Cena returning to SmackDown in 2 weeks, but he's going to wrestle his first match since WrestleMania. Taylor says it's September 8th. Okay, so the India show is September 8th. Thank you, Taylor. So he'll be on SmackDown, and he'll be at the show in India. Now the question is, who's he going to wrestle? I've been trying to get that answer, and believe it or not, it may tie in a tag match, and a lot of people are pushing for John Cena to team up with LA Knight and go up against Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. And it kind of makes sense when you think about it, because Grayson Waller and John Cena had that back and forth in the UK not too long ago. Grayson Waller just had a little interaction with LA Knight on SmackDown. LA Knight just lost a match to Austin Theory. Austin Theory defeated John Cena at WrestleMania. It kind of like intertwines with each other. So that would be a nice little rub if LA Knight teamed up with John Cena to take on Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. I think that actually could work pretty well. Only thing is, I know a lot of people compare LA Knight to The Rock or Steve Austin. I don't want to see, after the match is over, you know, because if this was Steve Austin, you know what would happen. 9 times out of 10, after Steve Austin would win his match with his tag partner, you know, if it's not a regular tag partner, he may do a toast of a beer and give them a stunner anyway, just for the fuck of it. Especially when Steve Austin was at the tail end and he was riding the ATV. Steve Austin would stun people that he would align with, and he'd laugh and drink like 95 beers, and everybody would go home happy. I don't want to see LA Knight hit the blunt force trauma on John Cena. If they team up, you know, let them prevail and go off, you know, the video, go off TV in a winning note. I don't think we need that extra step that, you know, Austin used to do. Or no, we don't want that. So we'll see. But right now, there are a lot of people that would are lobbying or pushing or want to see LA Knight and John Cena versus Grayson Waller and Austin Theory. I think that would be a pretty damn fun match. I have a weird feeling, though, that John Cena, because, there's going to be some talent from India on this card. Natalya has been name-dropping Great Khali repeatedly. You best damn believe your sweet ass Great Khali is going to be there. Will he actually wrestle? I doubt it. Will Khali possibly chop someone in the head? Yeah, that is a good possibility. Believe it or not, you know who we're going to see on that show? Anybody remember who this is? Shanky? Is that how Shanky used to dance? Shanky is going to be on that card. Yes, WWE never released him. So we'll see what happens. But John Cena will be wrestling in India. I think the tag match is probably apropos because it doesn't put a lot of focus on Cena. It could be more of a Gaga match. You know, think of, let this sink in. Do you remember the match that John Cena had on SmackDown not too long ago? Wasn't it like a six-man tag? It was a tag match that I remember. And John Cena didn't get tagged in until the very end. He literally was in the ring for about 90 seconds. So if you remember that SmackDown match that he was in, it's probably going to be similar to that. So that is your news about John Cena. So we will see him two consecutive weeks. By the way, you think LA Knight is going to get any heat tonight of bringing up Biff from Back to the Future? Anybody hear that little remark? He said that Miz looks like if Biff banged a frog and fell down a flight of stairs. I don't know what the fuck that means, but he actually said that on Raw. He's like, if Biff banged a frog and fell down the stairs, it looked like Miz. And I for some reason, like, I got that thought in my head, and I was like, you know, I never ever thought about that before. I'm sure you've all seen the movie Back to the Future. Fuck part two and part three. I'm not saying that they were bad, but the first one is the best one. I looked up a picture of Biff from Back to the Future. Oh my God. He does look like The Miz. He does. Why in all of the years, the 20 years of covering Miz on my shows with Kev, how come nobody, I don't think anybody ever brought up that The Miz looks like Biff from Back to the Future? That is pretty damn funny, man. But I know some of you out there were a little curious, like, who is he talking about? Because a lot of people don't know Biff by with it when he said his last name. Some people thought, oh, is he talking about somebody in Canada that we don't know about? No, he was talking about Biff from Back to the Future. So, all right, let's see what else we could get into. By the way, if you see the pinned thread on the show tonight, it's open for anybody that wants it from now until the end of the month. You know that Matt Riddle and Misha Montana are having a kid in December. I know exactly the date that kid is due. And on behalf of the family, because we did become friendly somewhat, you know, to an extent with Misha especially, was sending a gift for their newborn. I don't want to say if it's a boy or if it's a girl. Based on their registry, I kind of think I know which it is, but they don't reveal it. I'm not revealing it. But I already bought this stuff. I did it last night. We're giving them like this playpen. We're given this thing. I don't know if I ever had one when I was a kid where you just sit in it and you just roll everywhere. So, and a bunch of toys. So all you got to do is if you super chat and you include the hashtag bro, then your name, I will include it in on the card when we give them the card. You don't have to do it. It's optional. You know, if anybody super chats and don't want to be part of it, don't put hashtag bro. If you want to be part of it, just put hashtag bro and I will pick it up. And you know, that's from now to the end of the month. So I had some wise guys say to me earlier, DT, they don't need the money. Why don't you donate money to Hawaii instead? Yeah, we already did. Stupidity. I'm sure a lot of you saw that exchange a little bit earlier. So, all right. Let's talk about Raw a little bit. I'm going to talk about Lacey Evans a little bit later. I'll give you a little hint. Lacey Evans is opening up a coffee shop. And this was something that she's been planning for a couple of years. I wonder, 2 years ago, when all that military stuff was backfiring, if she started seeing the writing on the wall that WWE was not going to work out. So she's actually opening up a cafe in South Carolina. It's a nice little story behind it. There is a military tie-in with it, but we'll get into that a little bit later. But let's talk briefly about Raw tonight. Again, I love the crowd. The crowd was tremendous tonight. We're in Quebec, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, hometown. They went uber insane for Sammy. I mean, the pop was just tremendous. and he's taking it in, and WWE's allowing him to the extra time to take it in. And next thing you know, Judgment Day's music hits. And it's Groundhog Day once again. They surround the ring. Sami Zayn says to the Judgment Day, before you do anything, you don't actually think that I showed up in Quebec on my own. And the next thing you know, Kevin Owens' music hits. Kevin Owens comes down there, immediately lays out Dominic Mysterio. They chase the Judgment Day away. Kevin Owens gets on the mic and issues the challenge tonight. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus any two members of Judgment Day. So now we get the main event. And once again, as we've been saying, Owens and Zayn versus Judgment Day. And that would happen for a few minutes. And then we had the usual. Matt Riddle and Drew McIntyre took on the New Day. If you notice a little pattern with Matt Riddle's in matches, when Matt Riddle's in a match to open up Raw, Matt Riddle gets a lot more offense. When Matt Riddle's in a main event of Raw, Matt Riddle is usually the one taking the most abuse and gets the hot tag. Now, that happened tonight also, but Matt Riddle, if you notice the pattern, when he opens up a Raw, he does gets a lot more offense in there because they want that crowd to be lively and hot and everything like that. And remember, this was supposed to lead to not necessarily a title shot, but you're on the road to a title shot. So they're having a decent match. Early on, Xavier Woods is mocking the Glass Bros. They're not a real tag team. Riddle with some great offense early on, but he ends up getting beat down, like a lot of matches. And, you know, he's trying to get the hot tag, and he's not able to get the hot tag. Finally, about 5-6 minutes in, he hits a desperation flash knee to Kofi. Kofi's able to tag out to Woods, but Riddle still is unable to tag out to Drew. So finally, Matt Riddle gets a little more offense in, hits a beautiful fisherman suplex off the top rope on Xavier Woods. Now we think we're going to get that hot tag to Drew McIntyre. And Drew's trying to get into the crowd. They're waiting. They want to see Drew in this match. Drew would never really get in this match because the fucking Viking Raiders showed up. I don't think they could be salvaged. And again, insanity. They have him interacting with the goddamn New Day. What happens is Eric pulls Drew McIntyre off the apron so Drew can't tag in. And that allows Kofi to hit the Trouble in Paradise on Matt Riddle. New Day gets the win. And to immediately shift the attention that the New Day once again get a win, and the Viking Raiders get involved, the Viking Raiders start beating down both teams. It almost feels like what they did with the Street Profits against the Brawling Brutes in the OC 2 weeks ago. The only difference is the Street Profits, most people want to see getting a push and maybe even a tag team titles. The Viking Raiders, people just want to see them on Dark or Elevation. And before any wiser says, Don Tony, there isn't any Dark or Elevation anymore. Exactly. They cause the loss to Riddle and Drew. They're beating down everyone. Drew finally gets back in the ring, and he lays out the Viking Raiders. And as they're going up the rampway with Valhalla, you hear Drew McIntyre say, "Now we're coming for you." And I'm like, fuck. Fuck. I don't want to see that. And even, like, I guess next week, they're taking on the Viking Raiders, the New Day, madness once again. And they may have a rematch the following week against Riddle. I did laugh, though, because later on they had a segment in the back with Matt Riddle and Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre is like, "I don't think we're going to work out as a tag team." And Matt Riddle's like, "Come on, bro. You know, let's give it one more shot." And the New Day shows up and they're giving a little respect. Like, "We didn't take you seriously out there, but you're a pretty good tag team. In fact, we got a great name for your team. We'll call you McRiddle. Get it, McRiddle? You ever go to McDonald's, McGriddle? It's like a pancake with an egg. And if you listen to the little inside jokes, Riddle's like, bro, that's a great name. And Drew Mack's like, yeah, I'm loving it. Get it? They were using McDonald's innuendos in a conversation because one of the phrases with McDonald's is, I'm loving it. McRiddle. That better not stick. I don't think it's going to stick because Drew McIntyre ultimately is going to just get frustrated. I'm sick and tired of losing. And he's going to lay out Riddle. He'll make Riddle flat like a McRiddle. So, but, you know, you get the corny stuff with the New Day. Hey, listen, I'm happy Xavier Woods is back teaming with Kofi. Kofi was out, obviously, for a while because of the ankle injury. So, you know, they definitely enhance the show. I just don't want to see him back in the title hunt. And the Viking Raiders, I know they're trying, but I just think, you know, just like we talk about with Lacey Evans and others, you know, it gets to a point where some people are just damaged goods. I think that's kind of like happened with even some others, and it's probably more because of underutilization. You look at your Riddick Mosses, you look at your Eliases, you look at your Uzziah Lees, you look at some of these others out there. I mean, how do you recover from that? Seriously. I mean, what could you do you think they could possibly fucking do? I don't think you can do anything unless they just drop him back to NXT. They brought Dana Brooke back to NXT, and I'll give you a little teaser. Dana Brooke actually was the top rating for NXT last week. She actually outdrew Mello and Wes Lee. I kid you not. I will share it with you in a little bit. So now we get a backstage segment, JD McDonagh and Finn Balor. Finn's giving JD all the love. And don't forget, everyone, remember what I said 2 weeks ago? The phrase will ultimately happen. You can't spell Judgment Day without JD. And that's not my friend, one of the top podcasters in the world, JD from New York. JD as in JD McDonagh. JD can't spell Judgment Day without JD. So JD McDonagh will end up in Judgment Day. A lot more people now think Finn Balor is going to be the one. He's going to get the Edge treatment soon. A lot of people think that JD McDonagh is setting up Finn Balor. JD McDonagh will end up taking Finn Balor's place in Judgment Day. It's not necessarily the worst kept secret, but a lot of people feel, especially with some of the antics with Finn Balor, you know, crowd is really, really into him. And he backs it up. And online, he gets a boatload of respect, but JD's with Finn Balor, and they're with Jackie Redmond. Finn is giving JD the credit for last week's beatdown to Sami Zayn and Cody Rhodes, and Rhea Ripley shows up. Come on, Finn, we got to figure out who's going to team up against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. So Finn Balor goes to leave. JD McDonagh goes to walk with him, and Rhea Ripley stops him. He's like, Judgment Day only. So JD McDonagh's not allowed to go. Then we get the match that a lot of people were looking forward to. Of course, Gunther is not losing his championship. You know what is funny? I got to share this with you. I don't have the exact number of days, I don't believe. I'm checking my notes. I don't believe I do. But if you go on the synopsis for this week's episode, one of the news items this week in wrestling history, just to give you a perspective as far as Gunther and his reign, Harley Race was NWA champion for 900 plus days. Maybe someone in the live chat right now could look on my synopsis and just let me know how many days it was. It's towards the bottom of the synopsis. But Harley Race was the NWA champion for over 920 days. Dusty Rhodes, this week in history, beat Harley Race for that NWA championship. Dusty Rhodes finished the story. Thank you, Twix. He looked it up. 969 days, everyone. When you think about Gunther, around what, three and change? Harley Race was at 969. This is, let me get to the point. So this week in history, Dusty Rhodes finished the story, became world champion. I think this might have been his first reign. In fact, I'm almost certain it was his first reign. Do you know how long he held that championship for? He ended Harley Race's 969-day reign. Do you know how long Dusty Rhodes held that title for? 5 days. Imagine ending Gunther's 969-day reign to anybody, and they dropped the title 5 days later. Could you imagine the reaction with the IWC? Just let that sink in a little bit. That's why when we talk about Dusty and his reign, championship reigns, you know, when I've always said he is not one of the greatest NWA champions of all time, he's not. Because his three reigns, the total combined is like 40 days. You know, so I think a lot of people just don't understand. Dusty Rhodes was money for the chase. Once you got there, you know, it's kind of like, all right, well, you know, that was nice. And then you would have to lose it and chase something all over again. Some people, they need to chase. But Gunther, in this day and age, he's this close of making history. You're not going to screw that up. And I don't want to repeat everything we said earlier, but we got the outcome, what we talked about last week. Gunther losing. Not the championship, but getting a loss to give the suspension of disbelief that Chad Gable might be the one that could defeat Gunther for that championship. Tonight it was a countout. Chad Gable was getting the crap beat out of him. And give props to Gunther as well, because when Chad was hitting some of his offense, Gunther was selling it like $1 million. And the crowd was into it. The crowd was chanting, "This is awesome." And early on, Gunther is just taunting Chad Gable. "This is my ring." He's laughing. Even when he's pinning Chad Gable, he picks up his head a couple of times. So to count, just to torture him a little bit more. But then when Gunther really wanted to pin Chad Gable, Chad would kick out, which would frustrate Gunther. Chad Gable trying to mount a little bit of offense back, hitting some forearms, back suplex. Then he hits a nice dragon screw and locks on the ankle lock. The crowd is into it. They think, holy shit, could you imagine if he beats Gunther and comes this close? The Honky Tonk Man's record stays. But no, Gunther gets out of the ankle lock by kicking Chad in the head a few times with his other leg, which I loved. Better than grabbing the ropes, kick the motherfucker, force him to break the hold. Gunther stops the moonsault. Chad is outside the ring. At this point, we're wondering if Chad Gable gets counted out. And maybe the ring, you know, is not content with a countout victory. But no. Gunther comes to the outside, and now I'm thinking to myself, oh, shit, they're both going to get counted out. And we're not going to have a decisive winner, and we need a rematch, a payback. But no, we get a surprise. They're brawling outside the ring, and then out of nowhere, Gunther goes to chop Chad Gable, who is standing right by the ring post, and he gets out of dodge. Gunther chops the ring post, and that shit had to have hurt. Shit made such a loud sound, and he connected. Chad Gable immediately hits the German suplex on Gunther into the timekeeper's area where Samantha Irvin announces the winners. And Chad Gable gets back in the ring right before the count of 10. Gunther gets counted out. Your winner, Chad Gable. Imperium come out. They are pissed off. They demand Samantha Irvin to remind everyone that Gunther is still the Intercontinental Champion. And Michael Cole points out this is Gunther's first singles loss. Even though he's still champion, his first singles loss since being brought up. Big deal. That is awesome for Chad Gable. I mean, he's not winning the championship. This is Gunther's record to have. But still, being that first guy, you know, I mean, you look back, it's not a big deal anymore. But I remember when Chris Masters, the Master Lock Challenge, you know, was finally broken. When Bobby Lashley, I think he had an undefeated streak for a while. Obviously, we know about Goldberg. I mean, not on that level, obviously. But when someone has a momentous long streak of anything, the first person to end it, it's a big deal. That is something cool for Chad Gable. So we go to commercial. We come back, and Imperium is pissed off in the back. Gunther's reading the riot act to both guys. Gunther storms off. And then we get something interesting. Ludwig Kaiser looks at Giovanni Vinci and says, I'm going to make this right. What are you going to do? And I was thinking, like, it would have been funny. Like, he says to Vinci, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What you going to do? What you going to do, brother? No, Giovanni Vinci, he asks him, what are you going to do about it? And Kaiser storms off. Now, we find out next week, Chad Gable will be taking on Ludwig Kaiser. So obviously expect some big-time beatdown, and that will lead into payback. But excellent match. Gunther and Chad Gable, it's one of those matches where you know who's going to come out on top, but you don't care because you just want to see the match. That's been a majority of Roman Reigns' title reign, outside of maybe Clash at the Castle and WrestleMania 39. You know, a lot of his feuds from Kevin Owens to Jey Uso to Sami Zayn to others. I know some people fantasized, you know, the unthinkable. But for the most part, you know, you never felt Roman Reigns' championship was in jeopardy outside of those moments that we talked about. You know, WrestleMania and Clash at the Castle. So some of those feuds, you just wanted to see it because the storyline was so good or the wrestling is so good. You know, you look at even matches in AEW. One of probably the negative things about AEW is that a lot of the matches they advertise on TV are very, very predictable with the outcomes. You know, up until now, Orange Cassidy versus anybody for the International Championship, you know who's going to come out 99% of the time. You see some of the other matches out there, you know, you could put smoke and mirrors with Commander and Bandito and others. You know, most of the time, unless their opponent is Serpentico or Aaron Solo, you know who's going to come out on top. But you don't care because you know the match is going to be a banger. You want to see it anyway. So what tonight did was to give that doubt that Gunther may, in fact, Chad may have his number. And that rematch should happen at Payback. My favorite segment of the night, Shinsuke Nakamura. I didn't take many screenshots tonight because I wanted to be an easy night. But I did take two, outside of Biff from Back to the Future. Shinsuke Nakamura is addressing Seth Rollins. And I thought this segment was fabulous. Shinsuke talking in Japanese. He reveals what he whispered to Seth Rollins last week. The worst kept secret, everyone. We all know because he did the interview with Ariel Helwani. Nakamura says to Seth, I know about your back. And Shinsuke talks about ever since Hell in a Cell, Seth Rollins is in pain. He says when he hugs his wife, when he holds his kid, Seth is in pain. Seth is a world heavyweight champion, but every day he is in pain and I will break him. We are similar. We live by a code, and Seth has that code tattooed to his back, but his back is failing. His body is crumbling. Seth is under a lot of pressure. And then Shinsuke Nakamura looks at the camera and says, are you satisfied, Seth? I will not be satisfied until I take that burden from you once and for all. watch your back. And when the segment started and Shinsuke revealed that he whispered, I know about your back, and my immediate reaction was, yeah, the whole fucking world knows about that. But what preceded, it makes sense. And you know what was so tremendous about this with Shinsuke? And maybe some people will criticize because of this. Shinsuke never once talked about how he wants to be world heavyweight champion. That he has been slighted. That this is his time. You look at some people, like we always criticize Dana Brooke. It's my time. It's my time. I've worked hard. It's time I get a chance. It's my time. That was completely absent from Nakamura's promo. You didn't hear once Nakamura complain. You didn't hear him once feel like he deserves something and other people have gotten it. That's why I thought this promo was so strong and believable. Because all Nakamura was doing was shooting down Seth and trying to get in Seth's head and talking about Seth's pain. And later on, because Nakamura was not there live, Seth Rollins is with Jackie Redmond, and Seth Rollins reveals that he's got two fractured discs in his spine and in his lumbar spine. And that is legit, man. That is legit. I told you recently about Vince McMahon getting spinal surgery. He had fractures in his spine. A lot of you know about my dad. My dad fell off a roof like 4 years ago. I showed the picture when he was in the hospital. He's got two fractured vertebrae in his spine. And my dad never got them taken care of, because it's too risky of a surgery. They wanted to put what's almost like cement and cement the disc together. The problem is that one of the big risks is you could end up in a wheelchair for the rest of your life. So my dad chooses to just live with the pain. When Seth Rollins says he got it 2 years ago and it's not getting any better and he just lives with it, yeah. There's a lot of people out there with damage to their spine and they do not elect to get surgery. You can't simply just fix it. And in the case of Seth Rollins, sooner or later, he's going to have to take time off. The big question right now is, can he hold out until WrestleMania? You know, right now, you know, Cody and Seth Rollins are the two most over people on Raw. And yes, WWE would probably still survive if Cody was the only guy, the number one babyface on Raw, and Seth had to take some time off. But I doesn't feel like Seth is taking time off yet. But those injuries are legit. They are serious. He can still work, but it is a very, very painful process. That's why when we talked about Edge, you know, we could fantasize reuniting with Christian, another match with the Hardys, you know, match possibilities in AEW. I get it. But you have to take a step back and look at it with reality in the eyes of Edge. The reason why Edge is, you know, cutting back is because he wants to enjoy his quality of life, see his kids grow up, to spend it with his wife, to live a ripe old age and not be in a wheelchair in excruciating pain. That is a big deal. That is not easy, to just walk away from something that that's your lifelong love. And, you know, you take, you know, an approach that, hey, you know, I got my fill. My kids got to see me perform. All right. I'm content. I can move on. And even if Edge does stay with WWE, my gut feeling is he will, because WWE's got so much cash right now. WWE gives him another mill, and he does a schedule like Undertaker, as we talked about yesterday, or he's more of making appearances like Cena once in a while, show up, you know, maybe, you know, here and there, a WrestleMania match. Why wouldn't you do that? You know, it doesn't feel like Edge has this bucket list of AEW stars I gotta face before I retire. It doesn't feel that way. And that's no way criticizing AEW. But when you look at Seth Rollins, there's going to come a point where Seth Rollins is going to have to take some time off. The question is Nakamura going to be the one to put him on the shelf? We'll talk about it next week. Because this was not intentional. Next Tuesday, remember, I'm going on vacation from the 1st to the 9th. Yes, I have not changed the thumbnail yet. It's still Jimmy and Jey Uso. I kept it because I'm too lazy and it looks good. I made that myself. Kevin and I will be doing preview and predictions next week for Payback. That'll be online for everyone. Also, if you're part of our Patreon family, a little cheap plug. Kevin and I will be doing a Patreon exclusive show tomorrow. And that's an off-the-cuff episode, so everybody who's a patron could give us some material to discuss on the show. If you're a YouTube channel member, you get the show also. So this is not a money grab. I'm just plugging it because some of you may not be aware that we're doing it. So, okay. Miz, mystery opponent, LA Knight. Miz comes out there. Fans are chanting for Maryse. Miz reminds everyone that Maryse is from Montreal and she wouldn't dare be seen in Quebec. Gets a little heat. Miz recaps what happened last week. He talks about being a champion, how people are going to look at him 20 years from now. And he says, you know, the champions remain champions despite adversity. Name drops Roman Reigns. Name drops Gunther. Says that even in his match at WrestleMania against John Cena and The Rock got involved, he still walked out with the championship. He says LA Knight is not on his level. And this week, Adam Pearce let him pick his opponent, and it's going to be someone who is better and faster than anybody that LA Knight has ever faced in his career. We're supposed to forget that LA Knight took out Rey Mysterio and beat him. But Miz brings out Akira Tozawa. Yes, it's mocking. Akira, this is the biggest match of your career, right? Yes. And we get this goofy back and forth. Akira Tozawa's not taking it seriously. Miz gets pissed off and cheap shots him. And you all saw it a mile away. I saw it. You saw it. We talked about it over the weekend. LA Knight's music hits. LA Knight comes out there. He's on commentary. He's doing a damn good job. The banging of a frog and Biff, you know, I think even Michael Cole was taken back by that. I don't know if he'll get any heat for that. You know, remember the time it was after 10 o'clock, so I think he'll be okay. But next thing you know, Miz, LA Knight, they get in each other's face a little bit. LA Knight is throwing a lot of shit Miz's way. Somebody had a sign they drove 4 hours to see the Miz, and LA Knight's talking about that they drove 4 hours to see LA Knight. LA Knight is like they drove 4 hours to not see the Miz. Miz goes around and says, yeah, I'm the Miz, and I make everybody want to vomit. I'm always making people vomit. And we get a little bit of comedy back and forth. And what happens? Akira Tozawa gets the upset win. Miz is in shock. LA Knight, you know, a little bit cocky about it, hits the blunt force trauma, lays out the Miz. And we should get probably the challenge on Friday for Payback. You know, I think Miz versus LA Knight is a match people would want to see on Payback. Remember, Payback is not just the name of a premium live event. There is a big theme behind it. A lot of the people on the show, it's supposed to be payback for things that happened. That's why when you think about Gunther and Chad Gable, even though that match has not been made official. As of right now, there's only a couple that were made official. Seth and Nakamura, obviously the cage match with Becky Lynch and Trish, which we will get into in a moment. I wanted to mention Ciampa. Ciampa snuck in a little DIY reference earlier. Little promo from Ciampa, 63 days back, reflection. Looks at others. who have gone on, you know, who he has faced and gone on to bigger and better things. And then Ciampa says that he wants to be the guy. He used to be the guy. He knows what it means. It's like oxygen, and he wants to take a deep breath. And he even says, "Even if I have to do it, you got to do it yourself, DIY." Threw that little DIY reference in there. So this should eventually lead to Gargano and Ciampa back as a tag team. And they're needed as a tag team. Hardcore NXT fans will love it. They work great together. And the tag team division is quite bland right now. You know, SmackDown with the Street Profits, the Super Profits a little bit reinvented. But the OC, it feels like they're just going through the motions. It's not their fault, obviously. Rhea Ripley over Candice LeRae, pretty much a few seconds. It was just a couple of seconds. But here's the other screenshot that I took from tonight. Rhea Ripley, I hope this remains her finisher. Obviously, not every person that she faces she'd be able to lift like this. But this is almost like an elevated cloverleaf. Like if you ever, Dean Malenko used to do a beautiful Texas cloverleaf. This is like hitting a cloverleaf, but she picks Candice LeRae up in the air. Now, obviously, Candice is resting on Rhea's knee, so Rhea's not holding dead weight, but it looked great on video. And after the match is over, Raquel Rodriguez's music hits. She's limping down the rampway with a crutch. Dominic is kind of laughing. Rhea Ripley's kind of laughing. They're also kind of like, you know, are you nuts? You want more of this? Look at you. And it was all a ruse. Raquel Rodriguez is cleared. Raquel was faking the injury still with the crutch. Beats on Rhea Ripley a little bit. Issues the challenge. We will have Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Rodriguez at Payback for the Women's Championship. All right. Just to wrap up Raw. Trish Stratus and Becky Lynch. Boy. Becky comes out there, you know, talking. And by the way, I don't know if you picked up on it. And I tried to do a little quick research, but I could not find it. Becky Lynch repeated word for word the same promo that she cut around WrestleMania time. I can't remember if it was against Bianca Belair. I think it was right after. You know what? It might have even been before that. And she may have dropped the champion. You know what? I think it was last year. She dropped the championship. And she went out there and she said, I realize now that it's not about wins and losses. It's not about championships, but it's about legacy. It's about longevity. It's about fighting. It's about being unstoppable. I will find it. She cut that exact promo word for word. This was right after. You remember when she was like almost having a meltdown, and she was wearing a real excessive makeup, and she looked really, really like tired and frail and almost like flipping out. You know what? I'm actually zoning in on it now. You remember when Dana Brooke was the 24/7 champion, and we said they should do a storyline that Becky is so desperate for a championship that she wins the 24/7 title? That is the period, because she came out there shortly thereafter and said, I realize now it's not about wins and losses. It's not about championships. It's about longevity. It's about legacy. It's about being unstoppable. And that's what and she cut the exact same promo tonight. Exact. And then Trish comes out. Trish teasing a little bit of love to Canada. And, you know, she's like, merci beaucoup to Canada. And she says, I'm sorry you have to deal with these USA holes. Which was pretty funny. And then she reveals that, you know, being in Quebec doesn't mean nothing. It's not even Toronto or Montreal. She starts making fun of the fact that the Maple Leafs were champions and not the Quebec. And she even makes a local joke that, you know, if it wasn't for this sourpuss in the ring, I would have been like Trudeau and split. And the crowd is starting to really get under Trish's skin. They're chanting something. I didn't know what it was. I'm sure Trish knew what it was because she understands French a little bit. But the crowd was chanting, "We don't fucking care." And obviously the censors didn't know it was being chanted because it didn't get censored out. And Trish is like, "I don't understand what you guys are saying. I don't speak that." And they're reading the riot. And Trish reveals, for those that don't know, she's never been in a cage match before. This will be a first ever cage match. And she asks, "Am I scared?" "Yes, I am scared. But was I scared when I was 24 years old and I had my first match without any experience? Yeah, I was scared, but I nailed it. Was I scared when I was the first woman to main event Raw? Yeah, I was scared, but I nailed it." Even though that stat is not accurate. And she says, "Becky, you better be scared, because you're not going to survive this one, bitch." Didn't get much of a reaction. And then the awkward moment when Trish is like, weren't you saying something earlier about Zoe?" And Becky basically is like, "Oh, yeah. Next week in Nashville, it's going to be Falls Count Anywhere. Her and Zoe Stark." It fell flat. It was not very good. You know, this feud, maybe a month, 2 months too long. Now more than ever, I feel Lita's gotta make an appearance. You gotta close out this storyline with Lita getting a little bit of payback. Lita's gotta get involved in this. I think that will be the upside, because if Lita gets involved and whatever her involvement is works, then at least the close of the chapter, the book, will have a decent ending to it. If it closes out just Becky and Trish in a cage and no Lita involvement, I think Lita's got to neutralize Zoe Stark. I think that's the only way to go. But this feud, I know it's important for Becky. I know it's important for Trish. In the annals of history, it'll be a cool thing to look back on. You know, this week in history is when Sting made his WWE debut. Not everything that Sting did when he was in WWE were all that great. You know, some of those moments, you either loved it, like, for example, Seth Rollins, or you hated it. You know, but as the years go by, you kind of remember the more positive things and the moments. You kind of forget about the kind of caca stuff. It's going to be the same thing with Trish Stratus this time around. Chelsea Green and Piper Nevin, they are your women's tag team champions because Piper Nevin insists that they're champions and Chelsea refused to give back the belts. I don't have an issue with it because this is WWE and this is the utmost laziest way to do this. If you stripped Raquel Rodriguez because of Liv Morgan, or you strip Raquel Rodriguez because of someone else, if anybody else in the last year and a half got stripped because their partner was injured, and then you just allow in storyline Piper Nevin to show up, and because she's big and intimidating, who's going to tell her she can't be champion? Stupid, lazy. I know. They don't want to do a tournament right now because they got payback, because they got India, because they got other things going on. They really don't have the time to start pulling out a tournament. They don't want to do a tournament where we'll focus on so many different things right now. But Jesus, what a lazy... I mean, you feel bad for Chelsea Green because her and Sonya were clicking and I rooted for them to win and I was happy that they won. But this is just a lazy fucking way. And then what's worse off about it is, you know, they showed a nice video package for Piper today. And Piper did most of the offense. The match was 2 minutes long. But Piper Nevin pretty much squashed Katana Chance and Kaden Carter. And, you know, they've had a nice NXT run, came up to the main roster, has not done a whole lot as of yet, but still, they lost in like 2 minutes. They got squashed tonight. Chelsea Green acting like she's a little bit injured, so Piper picks her up and carries her off. So it's pretty much, you know, Chelsea's going along with it because she's kind of afraid of Piper Nevin, and Piper Nevin is being bossy. I told you to go to the ring. So that's pretty much where they're going with this. It's nothing against Piper, and it's nothing against Chelsea Green, but this is extremely lazy shit that WWE did. They didn't even try. They didn't even try. All right. So, your main event tonight. It was fun, but let's not deny it. Let's be a little honest. It's Groundhog Day. It's rinse and repeat. It felt a little bit stronger because of that Canadian crowd, extra lively, you know, but really this is, look, you see this on the screen? That's a screenshot. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus Finn Balor, Damian Priest. That's not even from tonight. That's from June. There's another one from even before that. You know, we've had this many times before. You know, during the night, they were teasing that Damian Priest and Finn Balor were not on the same page. Rhea Ripley's trying to get them on the same page. They don't know who is going to face Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. So it ends up being Damian Priest and Finn Balor. And the match, you knew where this was going. It was 10:38 p.m. And at 10:38 p.m., Janie McDonough is out there, and the briefcase gets involved, and Kevin Owens lays out Finn Balor with the briefcase. He gets disqualified. And you're looking at the clock, and you're like, it's 10:38. Like, oh, I see where this is going. Because earlier in the night, Cody Rhodes doing more Dusty. Cody's in the back with Byron Saxton. Cody, what do you think about what happened last week? Cody cracking a couple of probably fed jokes. JD McDonagh, what's up with his head? He looks like a Funko Pop. It just didn't feel like this is something Cody would have said. It felt like somebody fed him that. But Cody does the Dusty. And again, I don't expect a lot of younger fans out there to know every little intricate detail, because even I, you know, when I was younger, you know, Dusty for some years was before my time. But when Cody is in the back talking to Byron Saxton, and then Cody stops in the middle, is like, no, Byron, this is not good enough. You know what? Follow me. And Cody walks out into the arena, on the rampway. This is more like it. Crowd eats that shit up. That's little things that Dusty would do. Anything that he would do, he wanted the fans to feel like they were a part of it. So Cody's being interviewed in the back, and Cody stops midterm and says, you know, Byron, this is not good enough. Come here. I have a better idea. Follow me. And he walks out into the you know, the rampway. Little things like that. When he's in the ring to cut a promo at the beginning of Raw episodes, he says, for everybody at home, excuse me for a minute. I want to say hello to those who are live in attendance. And he turns around. And the crowd feels that personal connection. And all these things are the reason even more why he is so over as he is. Some people online will never get it. They still think that this is just going to nosedive. You know, it's something special. And all these little details is why it goes to the next level. Cody is talking to the WWE Universe. He's not talking at the WWE Universe. That is something that I've always said on my shows. Since 1997, what have I always said? I said, what I love about doing these is I don't talk at you. I talk to you. There's a big difference. And, you know, in any type of field, when someone feels like you're talking to them and you're not just talking at them and they're just listening what you have to say and you're going to say it whether they want to hear it or not, you know, there's that connection is not there. Cody knows exactly what he's doing, and he's doing it well. He's doing it well. Not every little thing needs to be spelled out, but the main event tonight, Kevin Owens gets disqualified. Next thing you know, Judgment Day are outnumbering Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Now, Cody earlier in the night says that I, along with Quebec, are going to be rooting for Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. And we're going to watch tonight the Judgment Day rise, like Damian Priest says, and fall. So, the end of the night, because Cody said, the one thing the Judgment Day has is numbers. But Quebec is going to get behind Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. They will have the number advantage. Not necessarily during a beatdown. So we get the beatdown. Judgment Day is outnumbering. JD McDonagh is out there as well. And fans are starting to chant, Cody, Cody. So Cody's music hits. He clears the ring. We're now at like 10:42. We go to commercial break. But right before commercial break, you know exactly where this is going. Cody Rhodes insists, let's make it a six-man tag. So now it's Cody Rhodes, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens versus Finn Balor, Damian Priest, the Dominic Mysterio, the Judgment Day. I was a little surprised at that because Dominic is wrestling tomorrow. I know Rhea Ripley wrestled early, but her match was very, very short. The Raquel Rodriguez beatdown was not that big of a deal. But Dominic went balls in today, got his ass kicked, ate a stunner. It was one cool moment where Dominic and Damian Priest both took a Cody cutter at the same time. But this was rinse and repeat. The match was fun. Crowd was energetic. But it's something that we repeatedly say on these shows. We've had it with Riddle. We've had it with Rollins. Now we're having it with Cody. It's Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and somebody versus the Judgment Day. And in the end, the Judgment Day fall. Cody Rhodes on top. Kevin Owens hits the stunner on Dominic, gets the win. And we go off the air. Happy Judgment Day. Last week, everything's in sync. 1 week later, total disarray. Kind of sounds like a Jericho Appreciation Society storyline. It's a fun main event. If you didn't watch it and you're on the shelf, if you want to see a fun quality match, watch it. But if you expect storyline progression to come out of this, skippable. Definitely skippable. That was your episode of Raw. That was your episode of Raw. Main event results, Ricochet over Riddick Moss, Natalya over Nikki Cross. Very quickly, because we'll get into ratings. All right, yeah, let's do this first. I got to show it to you. Here's a little pictorial preview with two audio clips. This week in wrestling history. As I said earlier, Dusty Rhodes dethrones Harley Race. 969 days just to hold the belt for 5 days. Obviously, SummerSlam 91. We got Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth. A little wedding. Oh, I will save this in a little bit. We'll save this one in a little bit. That's another great one, too. The Rock with Booker Wee, sucker. Anybody remember that? When The Rock brought out a midget Booker T? I could dig that, sucker, sucker. That happened this week in history. Oh, Seth Rollins and CM Punk. By the way, there's a fantasy match that went down this week in history. It was the Kings of Wrestling. Wrestling in NXT. They took on CM Punk and someone else. I don't remember what. It might have been Rollins, believe it or not. AJ Lee with the pipe bomb Anybody remembers her pipe bomb about the Divas Revolution? There you go, Nikki Bella. You should have died in the womb. Legendary, legendary. This week in history, Braun Strowman made his main roster debut. This week in history, The Miz pretty much ate up and spit out Daniel Bryan on Talking Smack. We had the IWA Deathmatch Tournament. Cactus Jack and Terry Funk. ECW Wrestling debuted on TNN. And then I got to share this with you. Yes, the infamous match between Hulk Hogan and Shawn Michaels from SummerSlam went down. The infamous match, Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect went down. But two other moments. One is a match that would never be able to take place in 2023. It was a tuxedo versus evening gown match between Howard Finkel and Lillian Garcia. And I can't play Stacy Keibler's, you know, legs music because we don't want any copyright. But if you never, ever heard or saw this match between Howard Finkel and Lillian Garcia. Now, you got to think about Howard Finkel at this point. He's in, what, his 60s? And he's coming off on TV like a dirty old man. And Howard Finkel said this to Stacy Keibler and Lillian Garcia. It's only a couple of minutes. I'm not going to play the whole thing. Just listen to Howard Finkel, and you tell me if WWE would get away with this in 2023.
What a very nice surprise to see you here tonight.
Anyway, Howard.
Yeah.
I just want you to know that I am not out here supporting you in your corner. I am out here because I want to make sure that Trish Stratus does not interfere.
Yeah, we saw Trish coming down with Lily.
Well, let me tell you something. Speaking of interference, right now you're interfering with something in my trousers.
Oh, love him. Wait. Okay, let's fast forward.
That Rudy Giuliani barred hookers from this city a long time ago.
Whoa! Look at Howard! Howard blocked the right hand.
Whoa!
Can't believe he said that. And Lillian just mounted Howard.
What?
I doubt a kid would have said that either.
No, don't ever say that. Look at that thing, Howard. He's groping. He's groping.
No, he's tearing. Howard might get aroused, King.
Oh, please.
Look at Howard. He's ripping and tearing. What an athlete is Howard Cootwell. Howdy, Roddy.
All right, we'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that because you got to listen to the whole thing. Howard Finkel calling Trish and Lillian hookers, it was just, I don't know, it was pretty wild. But you see that Vince logo in the lower left-hand corner and it says USWA on there? I have preached about this so many times over the years. You know, we all know about Mr. McMahon, legendary. Turned heel, 1997, Brett screwed Brett. Feuded with Steve Austin. In 1993, when Jerry Lawler was still working on the WWF endo in Memphis, they had Vince McMahon come down to Memphis a couple of times. And Vince McMahon was playing full-blown heel. Now, Vince was still just a commentator on TV. This is 1993. This is not even 1995. Nitro is not even on the air yet. And Vince cut numerous promos. But if you never heard this before, this is just a little clip from 1993. If you want a four years in advance, a little teaser of what Vince had in the back of his mind. Because it was bizarre. Because on WWF TV, Vince was not a heel. On WWF TV in 1993, Monday Night Raw had just started, but he was just a commentator. Interview segments was not a character as of yet. So just imagine in 1993 what we are watching on WWF TV. And meanwhile, in Memphis, Vince is doing this.
How could you have been so rude? That's Southern hospitality. How could you have been so rude? I mean, come on. I'm simply introducing you. People are booing. Why? Give me a break. Jerry Lawler starts running around the ring as I'm sitting at ringside. Starts running around the ring, trips over his own feet, points a finger at me and blames me. I had nothing to do with it. Come on, Jerry Lawler. Then from there, you want to get in my face. Oh, your breath. You've got the worst case of halitosis. But you know what? Come to think of it, it smelled just like the Mid-South Coliseum. It smelled just like everyone in there smelled. I've never been insulted like I was this past Monday night. Never. And Jerry Lawler, you asked for it, and you got it. But you know what? You're asking for it again. You're asking for it again because come tomorrow night, you're really going to get it. Come tomorrow night when the Hitman Bret Hart, the former World Wrestling Federation champion, steps into the ring with you inside a steel cage. It's bye-bye Jerry Lawler. It's no more king because you never really were the king. I mean, these Memphians really can't believe that you are the king of wrestling. And if you ever did believe Jerry Lawler was the king, you're going to find out differently, because come tomorrow night, Bret Hart, inside a steel cage, will prove once and for all he is the undisputed king of wrestling. And by the way, as I think back to last Monday, I think about Jerry Lawler. I think about how he's been pulling the wool over your eyes here in Memphis for a long, long time. I mean, how gullible can you people get? Jerry Lawler says he's going to give you your money back if he doesn't defeat this poor pot-bellied referee and send him to the hospital. Whoop-dee-doo. I'll tell you what, big mouth Jerry Lawler, why don't you put your money where your mouth is? Come tomorrow night in the steel cage match with Bret Hart. Why don't you say the very same thing? Come on, tough guy. Come on, big mouth. Why don't you say, if I lose the match to the Hitman Bret Hart, I'll give you your money back. Why don't you say that, huh? Well, if you do say that, Jerry Lawler, which I doubt you will, if you do, I think you're in for a big surprise.
Not your perfect Mr. McMahon, but 1993. Shades of Mr. McMahon. There is a whole series of promos. Some of them on YouTube. The video quality is awful. The audio quality, obviously, you heard, is not very good either. There's one or two that are better, but, you know, a lot of people to this day still don't know. And, you know, 30 years ago. All right. One other thing, as I said earlier, that happened this week in history, Sting made his WWE debut. Yes, that happened this week in history. So, pretty cool. This week's episode is a hell of a lot of fun. If you want to go check it out. Now, let me give you some ratings for the week. And then I'll give you that little news story about Lacey Evans, which is pretty cool. And then we'll get out of here for tonight. Before we do that, couple of super shout-outs. This is from Ice Mocha Lot of Weed. I don't know if this is comments or questions. I'll read it. It says, thank you for the 10 spot, by the way. Favorite Money in the Bank cash-in of 2010, Swagger on Jericho on SmackDown after Mania. Miz on Randy on Raw. Kane, OK, Ray, same night at Money in the Bank, or Batista cashing in as Batista in the Bank at Elimination Chamber on John Cena. I guess he's asking me, out of these Money in the Bank cash-ins, which one was my favorite? Probably Miz on Randy Orton, I would say the Miz cashing in, a little bit unexpected. I think a little bit unexpected. Batista's, my favorite cash-in of all time is Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler cashing in, I still remember, and yes, we admit that that night, you realize that just the surprise factor is probably why people pop more than anything else. Dolph Ziggler's heavyweight champion. It was okay, but I think once it sunk in, people were like, okay. You know, but that's probably my favorite one. But The Miz out of this list, simply because, you know, anybody remember Miz Girl? Need I say more? So thank you, Ice. Smoke a lot of weed. I think if you say that fast, I think what he's trying to say is, I smoke a lot of weed. I think that's what it is. I smoke a lot of weed. Mr. Rube Dog. Yes, we addressed Breakfast Soup and Mish earlier. Sorry I didn't give you the answer you wanted to hear, but I'm always honest on these shows. That will not be happening. Dream 101. How do I do the linguine lean? Very easy. If you have in your car a center console that you could lean your arm on, back in the day, and if you remember my video of me and my Lincoln Mark 7, back in the day, a lot of people used to do the linguine lean. What they would do is you hold your, I'll try to do it with the microphone, but you hold the steering wheel. When you hold the steering wheel on your car, you have to hold it from the top of the steering wheel. So you put your hand at the top of the steering wheel, and then you have to lean on the center console. So when you drive it, and the whole trick is, when you do it, you crouch down. So when you drive it, you look like this. I kid you not. That was a thing to do. You would drive, blast your music. Everybody would look at your car. You'd have the fuzzy dice. You would have the tint. You would have the license plate that had the LED lights that would go around. And you would do what we called the linguine lean. You used to be like this. That is the linguine lean. That was a legit thing that a lot of Guidos and Cugines used to do back in the 80s. I kid you not. So I don't know what Ruth's story you're talking about with Rudy Giuliani, Charlie Conway. I apologize, but I don't know what you're talking about with Giuliani and a roof story. So, sorry. All right, let's talk ratings for a few moments. And some of these numbers are very interesting. And I'm going to talk about a little trend that's been going on with Collision for the last 5 weeks. Raw last week, 1,758,000 viewers, down from the week prior is 1,890,000. The high point of last week, Shinsuke Nakamura and Seth Rollins, their confrontation in the ring, that did 1,870,000. Gunther versus Otis came in a close second with 1,859,000. The low point of last week was the main event, Finn Balor versus Cody Rhodes, did 1,640,000 viewers. Once again, as we've been saying repeatedly, if WWE got rid of Hour 3, their average number would be 150,000 to 200,000 viewers more. That third hour hurts them more than you can imagine. By the way, Viking Raiders last week against Matt Riddle and Drew McIntyre, when that match started, the rating went down 100,000 viewers. Soon as the match ended, the rating went right back up. I don't know if that's Drew and Riddle's fault. I can kind of go with the Viking Raiders because we've brought that trend up with the Viking Raiders before. Their matches caused big drops in viewerships. NXT last week, 680,000 viewers. That is down from the week prior, 776,000. The high point of last week was Dana Brooke versus Blair Davenport that did 724,000 viewers. And for those that are curious, Dijak and Wes Lee was a close second with 704,000 viewers. The low point, of NXT last week, believe it or not, it was a tie. JC Jane versus Thea Hale and Carmelo Hayes and Wes Lee having their confrontation to close out NXT. That did 636,000 viewers. I know a lot of people don't like me saying this, but I keep bringing it up because I don't want people to forget. Once again, Carmelo Hayes in the lowest segment of NXT. He was in that six-man tag a couple of weeks ago to open up NXT. Low point. He was in another match. I don't remember against who. It was not Damian Priest, Finn Balor. That number did okay. But this is several times now that Carmelo Hayes is in the lowest part of NXT. Dynamite. This is interesting. Dynamite last week. 874,000 viewers, down from the week prior is 934. Actually, up from the last week's 846. Let me tell you the deal with this. I put in parentheses, this rating for Dynamite last week should have been much higher. It did 874. It is still up from the week prior is 846, but I'll tell you why it should have done higher. The high point for Dynamite last week was the Chris Jericho, Don Callis, Will Ospreay, and Sammy Guevara segment. That did 944,000 viewers. The low point of Dynamite last week was the Young Bucks versus the Guns that only did 737,000 viewers. More importantly, as that match started, they lost 65,000 viewers during that match. Why do I say last week's rating should have been higher? Hour one last week, the entire hour, was 934,000 viewers. Hour two, on average, dropped all the way to 814. They could not maintain the viewers for hour two of last week. Big deal. It's a very big deal. Impact Wrestling last week dropped about 20%, scored 107,000 viewers. That is down from the week prior is 128,000 viewers. New Japan for the 17th did 48,000 viewers. That is down from the week prior is 55,000 viewers. Rampage for Friday, the 18th of August, did 416,000. That is up from the week prior is 398. The high point, give them credit. Rey Fénix versus Commander did 487,000 viewers. For Rampage, that's a nice number. Unfortunately, right after that match was over, they lost 100,000 viewers. The low point for Rampage was Aussie Open versus Ethan Page and Isaiah Cassidy, which did 389. But I will say this, to be fair, the final 45 minutes of Rampage, because Rampage is an hour long, so three quarters of Rampage, the rating did not move. The rating only moved for about 2,000 viewers. So once they lost that 100,000 viewers at the beginning of Rampage, it stood steady for the rest of the show. So that's a pretty big deal. All right, now we get to SmackDown, and then I'll mention the collision trend that I have found. SmackDown this past Friday, Edge versus Sheamus. That was hyped up as possibly his last match in WWE. Friday SmackDown did 2,094,000 viewers. That is slightly down from the week prior's 2,097,000. But remember, last week, the week before, they were preempted in several markets due to football. This past Friday, they were only preempted in one. So even though the rating is only down 3,000 viewers, they had five or six other markets that were airing SmackDown that did not air SmackDown the week prior. That is not good news. The high point from SmackDown was the Grayson Waller effect with Rey Mysterio, Santos Escobar, and ultimately LA Knight. That did 2,293,000 viewers. The low point of SmackDown Friday was the first half of Edge versus Sheamus that did 2 million viewers. It increased to 2,140,000 by the end of the match, but still 150,000 viewers less than Grayson Waller effect. So now we get to Collision. Now, obviously, we don't have Saturday's rating. It comes out on Tuesdays of every week. But I want to get into a little trend, something that we have found that is very, very interesting. The week prior, AEW Collision did 476,000 viewers. This was the week after SummerSlam. They were not opposed by any wrestling pay-per-view, and it only did 476, which is a pathetic number. But what I have found on Collision for the last 5 weeks, and I have a feeling it's going to continue the trend this week as well, is that Collision now, for some reason over the last 5 weeks, are putting on a rather lackluster match for the second match of each show. Like, they'll start hot and they'll end hot, but for the last 5 straight weeks, their second match would be like a big letdown from the opening segment, the opening match of the night. And for 5 straight weeks, that second match has been the lowest rating of the entire Collision. And I'll give you the last month as an example. August 12th, a week ago from this Saturday, the lowest part of Collision was the second match of the night, which was the Acclaimed versus the Iron Savages. They threw that on Collision. Only did 432,000 viewers. We go a week earlier, August 5th. The lowest part of Collision was the second match. Chris Statlander versus Mercedes Martinez only did 386,000 viewers, lowest of the night. July 29th, 2023, lowest part of Collision, second match. Minoru Suzuki versus Darby Allin only did, now let this again, did 678,000 viewers. That was the low, 678. July 29th, that was not their debut match. So when people were like, oh, 400,000, oh, that's, you know, that's expected, it's a Saturday night. Less than a month ago, the low point was almost 700,000 viewers. What are these people talking about? So now we go one more week earlier, July 22nd, 2023. The low part of Collision, match number two. Action Andretti and Darius Martin versus Bullet Club Gold did 556,000 viewers. And if you want to go one step further, remember those 3 weeks that we brought up Action Andretti and Darius Martin were the lowest parts of Collision? So if we went 2 weeks further, Andretti and Darius Martin, lowest segments of Collision. So they went 3 straight weeks of Action Andretti, scored the lowest rating 3 straight weeks. Now we have 5 straight weeks that they put on some match for match two, and people turn off. And you see it 1 week, 2 weeks, maybe every couple of weeks. But this is 5 straight weeks that they put on kind of a shitty match. None against Mercedes Martinez and Chris Statlander, but there was no hype to it. Who the fuck wants to see the Iron Savages? You know, Action Andretti, Darius Martin, you know, 3 straight weeks. So I figured I'd point that out so you may want to take a little note of that, because I'm sure nobody else is talking about that. All right, to close out tonight's show, because we went a little bit longer than I expected, I wanted to share with you a little news with regards to Lacey Evans. If you want to read the article in its entirety, check out the Island News in South Carolina. Lacey Evans just did an interview there, and she talks about how she is opening up Sunny Summers Cafe, and it's now open for business. She was working on this for 2 years, And the coffee shop is named after her daughters. And in this article, it says her real name is Macy Estrella. And she was in the WWE for the last 7 years. And she loved it. And she felt grateful. The constant traveling for her job made it harder to be with her family and to also do outreach within the community. She says, and I quote, "I thought I could be of more assistance fighting a different fight than inside the WWE ring. I want to focus on helping my community fight against addiction, fight against mental health." And she talks about, you know, some of the vignettes, if you remember how she lost her father, you know, and his struggles with mental health and drugs, alcohol. She said that while she was in the WWE, she used her platform to try and normalize mental health issues and help those children who have been affected by addiction. She wants to do that for her community. She wants to open her doors to community organizations like Alcoholics Anonymous. She is planning on hosting seminars and classes targeted at women and military spouses on important skills that are necessary to get a job. She also says that her focus is on mental health at the cafe. You know, she has a lot of inspirational phrases. I got to be honest with you guys, I kind of like the food. Those are like waffles with marshmallows and strawberries and chocolate and bananas. They look good. But she says that, you know, she wants this cafe to be open for first. She wants to serve first responders. She wants to serve military personnel, early risers, those who get up. The cafe is open from 5 a.m. to 6 p.m. and she is going to be there doing a lot of the legwork, but she wants to do more for her community, and she's got the cafe, and yeah. So you got to give little props for Lacey Evans. You know, she obviously, you know, screwed up with those remarks about autism, you know, made a misguided error. I think she just didn't do her research before making that claim. There's always some crackpot doctor out there that'll make the claim, and, you know, she fell for it. But, you know, when you read this article and you see some of the pictures and you see some of the backdrop, you know, it's 100% sincere. She definitely, you know, because she came up military, you know, what's military? To honor and to serve. And what is she doing in a cafe? She's serving, and she's going to do speaking engagements. And, you know, listen, I wish her well. Obviously, the WWE deal, 7 years is a long time, and it didn't work out. She doesn't say anything about a wrestling future. We had the conversation over the weekend about AEW, if that's a possibility. I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know if AEW would want to bring her in. But as of right now, she is obviously stepping away from wrestling, focusing on her family, focusing on community outreach, and getting her cafe off the ground. You know, so again, this cafe took 2 years to set up. So she's had this in the back of her mind for the last 2 years. So that kind of clears up as far as the deal behind the scenes, because some people thought she was fired, which really was not true. She just chose to not, you know, remain in WWE. I'll be honest, I don't know if WWE even offered her a new deal, but she definitely left on her own accord. So, all right, guys, I'm tired. It's 1 a.m. exactly right now. I will have a numb ass tomorrow, because once again, I hope you can join me. It is free. We're going to do an NXT watch party tomorrow for Heat Wave, since it's a special event. You can join me, playback.tv/Don Tony Show, and hope to see you there. And if you're part of our Patreon family, tomorrow night, right after NXT, Kevin and I will be on Patreon
doing a little off-the-cuff show. And that'll be available for our patrons and anybody who's a channel member on YouTube. So that'll go up after the show is over. So I appreciate everybody who joined me tonight. Post your comments. Always reading them. Always appreciated. And if you know anyone else out there that would like to check out the channel, let them know about it. So I'm out of here. Hope you have a good evening. And if you check out NXT tomorrow, enjoy Heat Wave. It should be an interesting show. You know, it's USA Network, so it's not going to be pay-per-view quality, but it should be still good nonetheless. So you all have a good night. Be well.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.